a second Cold War? I fear that it does. I fear that we are entering a new and terrible era that will rival the first Cold War. That by taking our eyes off the Russia, just like the former Soviet Union, is expanding once again, and this will be a danger to the United States, perhaps even greater than our war in Iraq. Let me tell you who I am. Some of you don't know. My name is Mark Levine. I used to work as an attorney in Congress. I worked for, in fact, the second highest ranking member of Congress, Democratic member of Congress, on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Homeland Security Committee. And for the last 5 years, I've been on the air on radio and television, giving you the inside scoop. I proudly host the Dialogue Series the third Tuesday of every month. Do you know what's going on in the caucuses? Do you care? I think you should. John Stewart said last week that perhaps war is God's way of teaching Americans geography, and I'm sad to say that very few Americans know the details, but the details matter. The history of what went on in that region and what is going on, and what the United States and Western Europe could have done to prevent it, and what we still can do, because the bad news is, well, where we are today, we'll talk about that, but the good news is I still think there are ways to prevent it. And of course, this wouldn't be dialogue if I didn't have you as part of the discussion. You can agree, disagree, tell me if you think I'm all wrong, if you have a different analysis, a different perspective, ask me a question. It's all about all of that. All you have to do is dial in 202-588. Is it 9739? That's what I got the call there. That's just the pledge number here. 0893, of course, the call letters 89.3 FM. I saw it. There's in the studio. It tells you that's, I guess, just for pledge week. So 202-588-0893, call in. Let me know what you think. It seems to me that this whole problem began because, let's face it, the United States took its eye off the ball. I think there are three main reasons we're in the trouble we are today. The first is Iraq. The second is a failure of diplomacy. And the third is oil. Basically, we took our eye off the ball, and Russia is now reasserting its influence over a much smaller democratic state of Georgia, one that reached out to the West, one that just 3 years ago, our president, George W. Bush, went to Georgia and promised them that they are not alone before, well, leaving them alone. It's very interesting. Some of you know this history, some of you don't, but I think it's important that we know this history. Of course, Russia is a very large country, the largest on earth, and one that expanded over the years and took over many, many other smaller peoples, the Ukrainians and Georgians and the Belarusians and Azerbaijanis and Armenians and a whole host of other people that you may not have heard of, the Chechens, the Ossetians, the Abkhazians. Basically, all people with their own culture, their own language, their own lifestyle, taken in under the Russian Empire. And then when Russia became the Soviet Union, it took over some other states like Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and grew to become the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union fell apart, when it imploded after the first Cold War, which cost the United States and Western allies trillions of dollars in that huge conflict, it gave us a real opportunity. Russia, this horrific empire, actually, for a time, became a democracy. And Boris Yeltsin was an imperfect ruler. In fact, he was known to drink a bunch. But he believed in democracy. And there was an actual chance to take the other great superpower and transform it into a democratic country, a country that we could work with. And then we took our eye off the ball, and we threw that chance away. And now the United States, unfortunately, is in decline. It's not just economically. We know that at home. We know that the poor are getting poorer. The middle class is getting poorer. Heck, even the upper middle class is getting poorer. Only the super rich are doing better in George W. Bush's America. But it's true in foreign policy as well. Our four greatest enemies are now more powerful than ever before. Not just economically, but militarily too. I'm talking, of course, about four authoritarian states, Russia, China, and even the smaller states of Iran and North Korea are more powerful than ever before. Three reasons: Iraq, oil, and the failure of diplomacy. In terms of Iraq, I think it's obvious that when you put all your eggs in one basket, when you put all of your military in one place, Well, your enemies know they're free to go where they want. North Korea knew that we took our eye off the ball. Bill Clinton had an agreement with North Korea, and that agreement brought in inspectors and allowed and prevented them from getting nuclear weapons. Then we started being involved in other things, and North Korea promptly developed nuclear weapons. Iran knows that we're weaker than ever before, and thus it is pursuing a nuclear program. It is hitting our troops in Iraq. It knows we are a paper tiger. China is beating us on the economic front. Hands down, really. And in fact, we owe so much debt to them, debt because of things like the Iraq War and Bush tax cuts, that China owns our bonds, owns our debt, and we better get used to our new overlords. In fact, I think that's part of what the Olympic Games were all about, China asserting its power. But nowhere greater did we lose influence than in Russia. Here we had the chance to take America's greatest enemy. Whatever you think of North Korea or Iran or Iraq, there's no question the Soviet Union was by far the most powerful, by far a country that could nuke us many times over, just as we could them, by far the greatest threat to world peace. Again, not saying that Iran or North Korea or Iraq was very nice, but they were nothing compared to the might of the former Soviet Union. And here we had that chance. We had the chance to make Russia a democracy. And what happens? Vladimir Putin comes in. And no one should have been surprised about his motivations. After all, he's a former KGB leader. And he proceeded to do what Russia has always done, to take over an empire, to take over the smaller countries nearby. And the interesting thing is that it happened step by step by step. While George Bush was praising his new friend, Vladimir Putin, first he cuts off an independent press. That's always, by the way, a clear sign that a country is going in the wrong direction. Cuts off an independent press, takes over the powers, the newly freed capitalism, starts taking over people's money, but most importantly, starts cutting down on people's freedom. And we said nothing. We did nothing. We were engrossed in Iraq. We also didn't really understand diplomacy. One of the things that I'm convinced that Barack Obama would do much better than President Bush is to actually talk to leaders. It didn't just happen in Russia, by the way. It happened in Iran as well. Iran had a very moderate leader in the early part of this decade, Mohammad Khatami, who was elected by his people democratically and reached out to the West. George W. Bush snubbed him. And now we have a crazy Holocaust-denying person who's seeking nuclear weapons. Oh, well, I guess diplomacy didn't work. But I think they also realized that all our troops were stuck in Iraq. But really, more than Iraq and the failure of diplomacy, the real problem is caused by the most dangerous thing America faces. And I can say it in one word with three letters. I'm talking, of course, about oil. Our dependence on oil. George W. Bush's belief in helping big oil, and not just Bush, but presidents before him, that has made us weaker than ever before. It is not a coincidence that Russia and Iran have oil. Heck, even people like Hugo Chavez have newly found wealth because of oil. And because we haven't switched to wind, we haven't switched to solar, we haven't done as Brazil has done and funds its fleet via biomass, it uses sugarcane, we are increasingly indebted to these very dangerous dictatorships. They got us, my friends, and they can do what they want. So Russia understood that it had a green light in Georgia. Now, it's more complicated than that, and I'm going to go through all of the details. I hope you'll be an expert on the Caucasus when we finish this hour. We'll talk about South Ossetia. Georgia certainly isn't perfect in this conflict. They made some mistakes as well. And we'll talk about what can be done about it, because the good news is I don't think all hope is lost. Another thing I want to discuss is the horrific crime of ethnic cleansing, because it's going on right now. Frankly, ethnic cleansing has gone on for centuries in Europe, indeed throughout the world, and what can be done about it. But first, this is Dialogue, and I definitely know that you get your voice in as well. So let's go first to Osaza. I hope I pronounced your name right. Osaza, welcome to Dialogue.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Yes, your analogies are quite fascinating and interesting to me this evening. I don't know how long you've been looking at these conflicts and things, and there's some quite interesting points you made, and I'd like to add to them.
Okay.
To the dialogue.
Okay.
Did not the United States know the troops were amassing in Georgia on both sides of that conflict?
Yes, we knew that the Russians were amassing in North Ossetia, just north of the border, and the Georgians were there too, and in fact the South Ossetians. This, I'm going to get to some of this in a minute.
My point is this, that the timing of things in an election time, right when the Olympics start, all these things, we know that timing is so important with everything, even just fishing, to be so simplistic. Timing is everything. And I do believe that there is a bigger game being played here, and that despite our debt and our deficits and these foreign nationals being so controlling over our economy and our dependency on oil, our lack of a democratic capitalist society, we are being played by our own internal weaknesses, and that is greed for the dollar bill. The system is built on the bottom line, which is a dollar. It is not a humane system that we perpetuate here, and I'm talking about all of us, except the ones who are the super rich. They have a different program.
Well, I appreciate your point, Osaza, and I largely agree with you. I mean, let's face it. When have we ever had a president of the United States, a vice president of the United States, and even a secretary of state, Condoleezza Rice, all of whom were oil executives? I mean, there's a reason why Chevron named its tanker Condoleezza Rice. You know, Dick Cheney was the head of Halliburton, a company made extremely rich, not just by our dependence on oil, but also by those huge no-bid contracts in Iraq. Because our president, our vice president, our entire government is focusing on oil. They even want us to drill more in oil in places offshore that won't even give us oil until 2030, according to the government's own documents, instead of focusing on alternative energy. The interesting thing is it doesn't just help big oil companies. It doesn't just help Exxon and Mobil become the richest corporations in world history. They made more profits last quarter than any corporation ever did anywhere in the world, anywhere in history. It's not just that. By padding their own pockets, and of course, it's just the few pockets of those that are connected to big oil, the rest of America is weaker. At the same time, my point is, and I think this part is inadvertent, I think padding their pockets, they plan to do, but they've actually made our enemy stronger. Russia, which has oil, Iran, which has oil, China, which has all our debts, are stronger than ever before. And I think that our president just didn't see what was coming. And I don't know why. I did shows 4 years ago talking about the dangers of Vladimir Putin cutting off democracy. And yet our president is in China, not talking about dissidents, not talking about authoritarian rulers, but supporting their Olympics, so much so that he doesn't even go home when Russia invades Georgia, when really the beginning of the second Cold War could be beginning, and our president is at the Olympics. It frankly reminds me a lot of September 11th when he was sitting in the classroom reading My Pet Goat. He just doesn't get it. So I agree with you, Osaza. It's a larger issue. The other point you raise about the amassing of the borders, you're right about that too. I got a lot of callers on the line, but let me just briefly give the history here, and then we can have a lot more dialogue. Basically, Russia took over all these countries, became the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed, Russia became a separate country again, and there were real opportunities for democracy. Obviously, all of Eastern Europe, Poland, and Czechoslovakia, which is now the Czech Republic and Slovakia, and Hungary, all of Eastern Europe became free. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia became free, and all those were very closely connected to Europe. Some of them, like Poland, the Czech Republic, have joined NATO. But then there are areas further to the east that are not as closely connected to Europe where, let's face it, it's a little ambiguous what's going to happen. In the Far East, we have all the stans, right? Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan and all these countries that are quite oil rich, that are very close to Russia, that fear Russia and want to not be under its influence, but at the same time recognize, particularly from this invasion, that Russia is the strong man in the region and the United States promises, like the ones we gave Georgia, are worthless. So here are these countries, they're coming in, they're becoming in their own. Georgia wants to have a Georgian republic where the people speak the Georgian language and practice Georgian Orthodoxy separate from Russians. But in Georgia, There's a minority within the minority, and that's the Essenes. And the Essenes have a separate culture, and they want their own autonomy from Georgia. And in fact, when Georgia separated from Russia, you had the Essenes reason basically separating from Georgia. And there was a vicious war. Indeed, there was another vicious war with the other renegade province, if you will, Abkhazia, a brutal war, in fact, where Abkhazia engaged in a lot of ethnic cleansing of Georgians. And since that time, since the early 90s, Abkhazia and South Ossetia have basically autonomous within Georgia. They had a ceasefire, and they kept that ceasefire all the way until August 7th, all the way until about 2 weeks ago when the South Ossetians started firing on Georgians. So Georgia then responded by going in and saying, South Ossetia, you can't, you know, bomb Georgians. We're going to protect the Georgians that live in South Ossetia, the minority within the minority within the minority. And then they protected the Georgians there. And then Russia came in ostensibly to protect the South Ossetians. It's all very complicated. And I recognize that. The point is that there will always be ethnic minorities. And the question is, how do ethnic minorities learn to live with each other? And I think the best way is to give each of them autonomy. To say that if you're Georgian, you can speak your language and practice your religion. The same is true if you're Ossetian. The same is true if you're Russian or Abkhazian or anything else. If not, what it tends to happen is people only trust their own ethnic group. And so when you have the falls of these empires, whether it be Russia or Yugoslavia or frankly in Iraq, where you have Shia and Sunni and Kurds all at each other's throats, people no longer trust anyone outside their ethnic group. And that leads to ethnic cleansing, and that leads to war, and that is very dangerous. I want to include you in the dialogue. It's 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. John, welcome to Dialogue.
Yes, your presentation, I think, is very biased, and it doesn't go back to the root of these problems. In the first place, it wasn't the Russians who had every nation on Earth with atomic weapons pointing at Russia. Yes or no?
Well, I think, China was pointing at both of us.
Oh, no.
We were pointing at Russia and China.
And U.S. allies.
But I don't see what that has to do with why Russia is invading Georgia. See, that's what I don't understand.
But let's go back to history about these conflicts. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, but I understand why it matters.
Wait, one second now. Let me finish.
Yeah.
It was the U.S. that scooped up the SS and their various high-ranking Nazi colonels and generals and scientists that worked at NASA, and you know von Braun was an SS man.
No question about it.
And also Galen, who was over the Gestapo, helped found the CIA.
Hey, no question about it. Let me just tell you a little bit of my history, just so you know where I'm coming from.
It wasn't Russia. It was the British who set up colonies in Iraq and Iran and all around there and controlled those people. They ran to Hitler to get rid of the British. Yes or no?
Here's what I let me tell you this. I agree with you about
now,
the Nazis. I used to work
to the origins of these conflicts.
I used to work
with the Germans who sent Lenin to Russia.
Okay. But here's the thing. Look, let me tell you this.
These things in a vacuum.
Hang on there, John. I used to work for the Justice Department as a Nazi hunter. I am well aware that we invited a lot of former Nazis to work in the United States. In fact, Pat Buchanan defended every one of them.
But why does the German Nazis and would not permit blacks to even be treated even halfway,
John,
as well as they treated prisoners of war,
John,
in Texas and Georgia.
John, all the things you say, okay? Virtually everything you say, I agree with.
Of course.
But I don't understand what that. Are you saying that because the United States? Hold on, John. Let me talk here. You can respond to me. Are you saying that because the United States has done many horrific things in our past, which we have, that somehow justifies Russia's invasion of Georgia? Because I don't get that.
I'm not saying it justifies it, but I'm saying there are important linkages that you cannot ignore.
I don't see any linkage. I really don't.
Absolutely. Let me give you a good example.
Okay.
When Hitler went to war with Russia,
right,
there were three objectives. One was to get access to oil because of the British influence in the Middle East.
Okay.
It was the British and the Americans that helped to topple the nationalists, for example, Nasser, in favor of these religious.
Why does
leader.
That justify Russia's invasion of Georgia? Okay, I mean, we can go into a long history.
Let's go back and see the entire set of events that has led up to this.
I don't think any of those events have anything to do with it.
That's all I'm saying.
No, look, okay, I can give you a whole long horrific history of all the things the United States has done, from genocide of Native Americans through slavery, through Jim Crow. I could talk about all the horrors that Britain has done. I'm not denying any of that. What I'm saying is that now, in 2008, Russia has invaded Georgia, and the reason it's invaded, let's be clear, is because Russia wants an empire. That doesn't justify our war in Iraq.
Let's go back to this. I'll tell you what. Let's look at the things in a little more detail. Isn't it coincidental that while the Russians were putting troops on their on the Georgian border, this occurred at the same time as an election in the United States, which
absolutely
the leader of Georgia pays McCain followers lobbyist fees to help secure his position.
Well, I don't know about the Georgia leader paying McCain's lobbyist fees. Hold on. Here's the thing.
Let me just finish now. Last time we had an election in this country, a presidential election, it was Osama bin Laden. One of the big reasons why Bush won is because Osama bin Laden came out with a message during the in October. In fact, Kerry himself said if it wasn't for that message, the Democrats would have won.
Here's the thing. I see this thing as not a grand conspiracy theory.
Here's what I see.
Russia knows American elections. You're right. It's not a coincidence. Listen, they invaded Hungary in 1956. They invaded Czechoslovakia in 1968.
They know that
we have an election, and they know that there are Olympics, and they know that that the whole world isn't watching, and that's when they do these awful things. All I'm saying is that Russia is trying to regain its empire. And here we have a democratically elected country, which wasn't perfect. I think Georgia walked right into Russia's trap. I think Russia was sent the South Ossetians to commit terrorist acts, hoping that Georgia would punish them so they could come back in and punish Georgia. I understand that. Georgia is not at all a perfect party in all of this. But they are a democratically elected government. I don't know of any, you know, connections to McCain. I think they simply want to be free. And my point is that as long as we have all of our troops in Iraq, as long as we still are dependent on foreign oil, we're going to have our enemies get stronger and stronger and stronger at our expense, and not just our expense, but the expense of democratic peoples around the globe. And I do want to praise one president, one leader in the West, one president who saw the problem and really, I think, has worked hard to help us. Of course, it's not President Bush. I'm talking about President Sarkozy of France. Nicolas Sarkozy, I think, did an amazing thing. He went back and forth between Moscow and Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, as the head of the European Union. It is good to see Europe asserting itself. He insisted on an immediate ceasefire, which is good, before Russia gobbled up all of Georgia. But more than that, he got in writing the Russians to agree to leave Georgia. Now, the Russians right now are not obeying that agreement. But Sarkozy is standing firm while our president doesn't seem to know what to do. And he is they had a meeting of NATO today. And I think there are things we can do against Russia. Now, not military things. I don't think we want to see American troops and Russian troops there. But Russia needs us, too. And we can take diplomatic actions. We can have sanctions. We can let Russia know that, yes, there are benefits to being part of the democratic world. But if you don't act democratically, there are negative things, too. And I think that if we have people in Europe leading the way, I think if Barack Obama becomes president, he knows how to use diplomacy. We can push the Russians back, if you will, diplomatically. They've agreed to leave. They don't have to lose face. So they can go back to their country. And at the same time, we realize that there are carrots and sticks. I think we can prevent a second Cold War before it comes. And I think I can say that without in any way doubting or disputing all the things that John said about all of the horrific things that America and Britain and other countries did in the past. Let me go to Paul. Paul, welcome to Dialogue.
Yes, thank you. I feel unpleasant sort of echoes of Richard Pipes' kind of school of Sovietology in your basic analysis of the relationship between Russia and the United States. And I've studied Russia and the Soviet Union for 30 years, and this analysis that you've presented is it's sort of American liberalism in a certain sense, kind of at its worst, I'm afraid, because you're presenting, granted, the Soviet Union was an empire before it was, there was the Tsarist Empire. The nature of the expansion of the Russian Empire is straight out of Richard Pike's history of Russia, which completely ignores that the United States is an empire which much more brutally took over the territory that it took over than the Tsarist Russia did. The relationship between the Russian center and the Central Asian states is not nearly as simplistic as, or Armenia for that matter, which the Russian states predicted from the Turkish Empire. I mean, it's all just a big jumble, just the way Richard Pipes would have it. Regarding Kosovo...
Let me ask you, I mean, do you consider Georgia not to have been a democracy trying to reach out to the West? I mean, are you justifying the Russian invasion?
I didn't even get to Georgia yet. I wanted to sort of go through three points quickly without monopolizing the show. I just wanted to say that to present for the American empire, particularly at this stage in American history, which has illegally invaded and destroyed and massacred another country, which is torturing people, to
right.
posture as somehow teaching lessons to other people in democracy and non-empire building is just... It's a farce.
Well, let me be clear.
We have no moral position.
Let me be clear. You're absolutely right.
Period.
Let me be clear. You're absolutely right that this president, George W. Bush, has absolutely forfeited the moral high ground. You're absolutely right. By torturing people, by having secret prisons, by throwing Americans in jail without trial, by invading a country that never attacked us, we've lost the moral high ground. That's why I'm glad to see Sarkozy leading the way. But I also am looking at it not just with regard to our horrific past, but to a future. I like to think that Barack Obama could and would do something about it, not just about correcting our own horrific, unconstitutional actions, but also recognizing that just because we have a horrible, unconstitutional president doesn't mean that there aren't real enemies in the world, doesn't mean that the Russian crackdown in Georgia wasn't brutal, and that doesn't mean that we shouldn't practice, the old George Kennan-like protection. I mean, we had Saddam Hussein cornered. We didn't have to invade the country. We frankly won the Cold War without invading Moscow. I'm not advocating invading, but what I'm saying is that we do need to protect against expansion of any kind, just as we need to stop our own. Does that make you feel better about it or not? Is he gone? Okay, he's gone. I appreciate the critique, and I want to hear from more of you. The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. We'll have to take a quick program break, but we'll be right back in the next half hour with more of the Russian-Georgia conflict and its impact on American foreign policy. Right back after this.
I have learned my lessons from Ra. Now, you learn one. Ra, why is the universe so mean? And how can music in general, and your music, help us all?
Well, the music is mean. I mean, mean is a word which means something that's terrible. But it also means something that's good, or excellent, in black terms. So therefore I'm using music as a means to an end.
The voices of Brother Ah, then known as Robert Northern, and the late great Sun Ra from a 1970 interview done at WBAI, Pacifica's New York station. Please join Brother Ah and the Jazz Collectors this Tuesday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. to hear more of this historic conversation, as well as live discussions with former members of Sun Ra's orchestra. Again, that's Reflections on Sun Ra with Brother Ah, the Jazz Collectors, and former Sun Ra Orchestra members this Tuesday, August 19th, beginning at 8 p.m. on WPFW at 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice radio, serving the collective needs and imagination of the community.
I'm using music as a means to an end.
Welcome back to Dialogue. I'm your host, Mark Levine, a former congressional attorney, used to work for the second ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary and House Homeland Security Committee, and now I'm on the air giving you the inside scoop and proudly hosting Dialogue the third Tuesday. We're talking about the Russian invasion of Georgia. And it's interesting to me because I'm someone who's constantly criticizing the President of the United States. There's no question in my view he should be impeached. In fact, I wrote the brief challenging the Florida electors in 2000. So there's no question that I'm someone who strongly condemns the current government. And indeed, I think it's the actions of the current government that has made our enemy stronger. The fact that we have put all our eggs in one basket, virtually all our troops in Iraq, a few in Afghanistan, means that we don't have the military we once did. We're having to scrape the bottom of the barrel. We look for felons, people without even high school diplomas, younger people, older people. We have to because we have a president who's run our military into the ground. Our addiction to oil and the need for George Bush to finance his supporters in big oil has made us weaker because it's made countries like Russia and Iran and even Venezuela stronger. And they're rich on our oil. We truly are funding both sides in the war on terror, and that includes our allies in countries like Saudi Arabia. And that money, every time you fill up your SUV, that money finances the people who are fighting to kill Americans. And also, of course, the massive debt and the failure to use diplomacy. But what I think is the difference between some on the left and liberals, and I consider myself a liberal, not a leftist, is I think that some on the left would say that because the United States has done a number of horrific things in our past, all of which I recognize, that therefore it's justified for other countries to do horrific things. The United States practiced ethnic cleansing, did genocide on Native Americans, therefore it's okay if the Russians do it, or if the Nazis do it, or if, you know, Iran has nuclear weapons. It's perfectly fine because we illegally invaded Iraq. To me, a liberal says, now, wait a minute. I can hate Vladimir Putin and George W. Bush. I can say that Bush deserves to be impeached and at the same time say that we shouldn't trust Putin, that we can I can still decry Russians' invasion of a country that was democratic and reaching out to the West. And I would say it's not an either-or kind of thing, that just because you can name 1,000 horrific things that America has done, and you can, and I would agree with you, doesn't mean that other countries can do the same horrific things. I'm against ethnic cleansing wherever it occurs, whether it is in Kosovo or in Georgia or out in the American West. I'm against it wherever it occurs. I'm against the crushing of democracy wherever it occurs. And I think we need to stand firm against Russia. And I hope that Barack Obama, as our next president, can bring back the moral guidance, can bring back. I was just in Europe, and I know how Europeans are looking to Barack Obama to reestablish an American morality, an American people can look up to. It is not a coincidence that in 1989 in Tiananmen Square, the people of China fighting against their authoritarian government, which we've done so little to complain about in the Olympic season, they carried statues of liberty. They carried American symbols. They looked to America. Now, I know that George W. Bush has frittered away our moral authority. I know that because of his actions and other actions of our government, not just him, that America is seen as a greater danger in the world to a good to the world. I recognize that. I don't deny that. But I like to think that with Barack Obama being elected, we can reclaim the moral high ground, recognizing the past, but moving on to the future. And part of that is decrying, in my view, ethnic cleansing, crushing of democracy, authoritarian rule, wherever it occurs, whether it occurs in the West or the East. But hey, if you disagree, this is Dialogue, 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Alice is next. Alice, welcome.
Yes. You know, with all due respect, I think you're too poorly informed to be on a station such as WPFW.
What am I poorly informed about?
Because you've said nothing about how we actually created this whole situation by targeting Russia with our missiles, by our military.
Are you saying that the Cold War was our fault? Are you saying that Russia didn't?
You don't even have to go back that far, although every president has, since Bush 1, has made gross mistakes with Russia. Gorbachev told Bush to create a Marshall Plan for what was the Soviet Union to prevent the disintegration and prevent any kind of animosities, because they're not natural, they're not inevitable. In Iraq, Bremer created those animosities. They didn't exist And to ignore our hypocrisy, to ignore the missiles, to ignore...
What do you mean the missiles? I mean the Soviet Union came in and crushed democracy in Czechoslovakia in 1948...
They crushed democracy
in Hungary in 1956. They crushed democracy in Poland. I mean, are you defending?
This country has never supported democracy. This country's foreign policy has destroyed
democratic efforts
everywhere in this world.
Well, no, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. You're absolutely right. We support dictators in Saudi Arabia and Argentina and Egypt.
The point is, we created this conflict in Georgia by putting missiles in that area, by bringing NATO into that area.
We didn't bring NATO into that area.
Militaristic foreign policy. You don't belong on WPFW.
Well,
you should be talking about alternative energy and what we could be doing. You're demonizing Venezuela. You're demonizing Iran. Those countries have not taken action against any other countries. We have. Our hypocrisy is at the root of this whole problem and of the conflicts that are taking place today. Until we acknowledge our hypocrisy, nothing's going to change. Thank you.
Well, Alice, I respect your opinion, but you say I'm poorly informed. Georgia wasn't in NATO. In fact, we didn't allow Georgia to become part of NATO. Europe denied them that. We didn't put missiles in Georgia, so I'm not sure what missiles you're talking about. Look, you can recognize, and this is, I guess, the point I'm trying to make, you can recognize the horrific things America has done, and you're right. We have supported dictators all across the globe. We have also supported democracy across the globe. We have done good, and we have done bad. I don't believe America is pure evil. I don't believe that every single thing America has done is bad. If you disagree with me, call in. I think we've done some good. I think we did good in the Berlin airlift. I think we did good in fighting the Soviet Union. I think we did horrific things in Argentina, in Chile, in Egypt, in Saudi Arabia. Today, we're supporting brutal dictatorships. We've done good and we've done bad. And it seems to me that that part of making America do the right thing is having a consistent position anywhere across the globe to say that ethnic cleansing is wrong, that we need constitutional law. One of the things I always condemn George W. Bush about is torture, is whole extraordinary rendition, sending people to other countries to be tortured. And this long list of lawlessness, no question we don't have moral authority. But I don't believe that because the United States has forfeited its moral authority on so many fronts, that means therefore we have to give up on democracy. Therefore we have to give up on ethnic cleansing. That if there's going to be genocide in Darfur, we can't stop genocide because we've done horrific things in our past. Let the Darfurians die. Let the Georgians die. Let Iran, if Iran wants to have a second Holocaust, that's just fine by us. Let them murder, millions of people because the United States dropped atomic bombs on Japan. It seems to me that to have a consistent moral position is not to say you have to support the United States or support Iran, but to actually recognize right and wrong, to say that ethnic cleansing is wrong wherever it occurs, to say that invading and destroying democracy is wrong wherever it occurs, whether the United States does it or whether a foreign power does it. And one thing that I find striking is people who are so angry at the horrific things we've done that instead suddenly they love things that other countries have done. I mean, there were people, let's face it, who supported Stalin. Because they were angry about the United States' mistreatment of blacks, mistreatment of others. And so the Communist Party of the United States was actually not a racist party. They supported civil rights. So people thought, well, then that's good. Then it must be good what Stalin's doing because he's a communist too. I would argue it's not so simple as that. It's not like you have to be pro-United States or pro-Russia. I condemn aggression wherever it occurs. I condemn our war in Iraq. I also condemn Russia's invasion of Georgia. Let me go on to Mark. Mark, you're going to give it to me too, or you agree with me? Mark, you're on the air. Did we lose Mark?
Hello?
Yes.
This is not Mark.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Arjamu.
Is this Arjamu?
Yeah, how are you doing?
I apologize. I thought you were Mark. Go ahead, Arjamu.
All right. But I find your analysis is so one-sided. And for a while, I thought I was listening to Tucker Carlson.
Really? Tucker Carlson calls for the president to be impeached? I've never heard him call for Bush to be impeached. I don't think Tucker Carlson has ever complained about our horrific support of dictators in Egypt and Saudi Arabia. I've never heard Tucker Carlson complain about Bush's torture policy or our ethnic cleansing of Native Americans. Maybe you listen to a different Tucker Carlson than I do.
It's good that you can carry on. I just hope that you're going to allow me to make my point.
Go ahead.
First of all, Georgia invaded South Ossetia.
after South Ossetia shot missiles to kill Georgians.
Didn't they invade South Ossetia? They invaded South Ossetia.
After South Ossetia broke...
South Ossetia,
right, but after South Ossetia broke the ceasefire.
So they committed serious atrocities over there. Now,
I think they
I
did.
I find it very one-sided for you to just refer to what the Russians... The Russians drove them out. If you run in my house with a big gun, and I take my gun and run you out, I'm not committing atrocities. I'm just doing justice by running you out.
Okay.
And I think that if we are going to criticize Russia for going into to South Ossetia...
And into Georgia.
Georgia.
They're in
run,
Gori
and,
now.
And running the aggressors out. You see, we can't blame Russia for doing that. I also see a parallel in what Georgia did by going into South Ossetia.
Well, why did Georgia go into South Ossetia, Arjamu? Just so we're clear for our listeners, what?
And one more thing.
I know. Hold on. Just hold on. I just before we change history here. Let me just get the event, Arjamu. I will give you a chance to speak.
Those people and a whole lot of y'all weren't saying anything. You never said anything.
Arjamu, let's just talk about what happened on August 7th. I just want to know if you agree with the facts, okay? According to the newspapers,
to
according to...
Let me give you a yes or no answer. I'm not done with that kind of stuff.
No, but the point is that you're only giving a part of the history yourself.
Well,
what happened is...
what I have to say, if I'm like you...
You don't want me to tell you the truth, which is that South Ossetia bombed Georgian positions first. You don't want
to
discuss that, right?
I have 1 minute to make 100 points.
But my point is, you don't want to talk about the history of what happened. And let's just agree on the history, or maybe you disagree. But according to the Washington Post and CNN, according to Georgia, according to Russia, according to South Ossetia, South Ossetians began this. They broke the ceasefire. They sent missiles into Georgian villages. They tried ethnic cleansing in Georgia. Georgia responded, you're right, disproportionately. They committed some atrocities, which I do not defend. They responded to South Ossetia attacking Georgia by going in and attacking South Ossetia. And then you had Russia come in and invade not just South Ossetia, but Georgia too. If anything, it reminds me of World War I, where you have, you know, someone assassinate an archduke, and then Austria punishes Serbia, and then Russia punishes Austria, and then Germany punishes Russia, and soon we have a world war. But I want to be clear, Georgia's actions weren't taken in a vacuum either. They're all a bit to blame. Now, go ahead.
It's a very provocative action for the United States to want to install missiles. They haven't, but they want to and plan to install missiles in Poland and Hungary. That is provocative. Remember what Kennedy did when the Soviet Union wanted to put missiles in Cuba. It's the same thing, man. It's the
and
same
so
thing.
In your view, that's why Russia invaded
that.
Georgia?
Hello?
In your view, that's why Russia invaded Georgia, because of the missiles in Poland?
Well, all these things got to be taken in context. It's the United States is over there engaging in very provocative actions. And I think that what can't be ignored, too, is the fact that there is oil in the Caspian Sea.
True.
And they are looking at a way to get their hands on those resources.
That's true.
See, I think you need to be more comprehensive in what you're saying, my friend.
Okay. I'll tell you, it's hard to give a full complicated history.
Listening to you, man. You know, and, try to be even-handed in what you're saying.
Well, it's hard to give a full complicated history in a short time. But you're right about the oil. There's no question the United States wants oil. There is a pipeline that goes from Azerbaijan to the Black Sea through Georgia. You're absolutely right. And that's something that the United States wants. As far as the missiles, you know, it's not something I would have supported, but I understand why Poland feels that after centuries of being invaded by the Germans in the West and the Soviets in the East, that they want some protection. What's interesting about the missiles is that before the invasion of Georgia, Poland was refusing them. They were saying, like you said, it was provocative. They didn't want to provoke Russia. After the invasion of Georgia, Poland now wants the missiles, because I think now they fear Russia. I don't want any of this to escalate. I don't want the United States, to escalate. I don't want Russia to escalate. That's why I support the Sarkozy plan of making everyone go back to where they were from the beginning. That includes Georgia troops, South Ossetia troops, and Russian troops. Let me go on to, is it Mark? Mark is next. Welcome.
Because I think now they fear Russia. I don't want any of this to escalate.
Mark, are you there? Turn your radio down, Mark. I'm calling for you. Are you there, Mark? One last chance. I'm going to have to move on. All right. Sorry, Mark. I didn't hear you. Let's go on to Carlton. Carlton, welcome.
Hello. How you doing today?
I'm doing good.
All righty. Look, let me make a statement and before we get off on it, because unlike one of the callers before, I don't agree that you don't belong on WPFW. I think WPFW is a diverse radio station that includes all voices and all opinions.
I appreciate that, Carlton.
Whether or not we agree with you or not, your statements, your comments, your show does provoke a debate. And that's
thank you,
good.
Carlton. I appreciate
that's what
that.
It's all about. Let me say this. The last caller sort of hit on what I was thinking about, and that is the fact that the U.S., first of all, there is no moral high ground whatsoever. Second of all, the oil pipelines, which Georgia, as a so-called democracy, that word democracy is always relative to the person using it. The fact is the oil pipelines, if Russia is beginning to view everything and the dynamics all around it as being a threat, you know, with the missiles and the pipelines, and you are in their region. It's not like the U.S. who went millions, I mean, not millions, but miles and miles to go to invade another country. This is within Russia's region that the U.S. is trying to, I guess, as the so-called lone superpower, trying to implement its influence. And I don't blame Russia. I mean, I think we would do the same thing. Let me say one other comment, and then you can respond on it.
Okay.
And that is, I know it's your radio show, and a lot of us, we wait a long time to really talk. So to some degree, don't become too defensive. You know, I know you want to defend your views and whatnot, and that's good. But sometimes just don't get to the point where you feel like it's really a personal, personal defense against you or offense against you. It's just that people are heated about this particular subject. They don't like the idea. They don't want America to get off the hook, and we definitely don't want to get America to get off the hook. But we also understand that Russia has some blame in all this. Georgia has some blame in all of this. But, you know, I guess trying to determine who is the culprit in all of that is the most difficult situation. But guess what? I love your show. Keep at it. You know, keep the provocative debate going on, and I'll listen to your comments off air.
I appreciate what you say, Carlton, and I appreciate your supporting me being here. Really only one caller got personal with me and said I didn't belong on the radio show. I'd rather someone attack my views than attack me. So I do appreciate what you have to say. And also, I think you have a more nuanced view. I mean, the point is that there are many people to blame. Our government is to blame. I mean, we, again, our dependence on oil, all of our troops in Iraq, by not focusing on the dangers. I mean, Russia was a democracy for a limited amount of time. We had about a decade. And what did we do when Putin started taking control piece by piece by piece? We did nothing. We did nothing to help the Russian people. We did nothing to help the Iranian people when they had a moderate leader that they elected, Mohammad Khatami. We did nothing to help him as the mullahs took control. The point is that I don't think we did anything wrong in Georgia. I mean, Georgia elected its leader, Saakashvili. Now, they did some things that were wrong. One of the callers pointed out they overreacted in South Ossetia. I think they did. I think they were attacked. They overreacted, and it was a really silly thing to do because I think Russia was waiting for that. Indeed, I think Russia gave the green light to the South Ossetians to attack the Georgians, hoping for a Georgian reaction just so they could come in, much as, frankly, Hitler claimed that Poland invaded Germany in September of 1939. They didn't, but the point is Russia was looking for that pretext. Lots of nations look for pretexts. We looked for it in the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam. We looked for it in lying about WMDs in Iraq. And it was wrong and stupid of Georgia to walk into that trap. Notwithstanding all of that, I do think that we can regain the moral high ground. I look at it as this president's time is over, thank God. In 4 months, we will have a new president. I hope it's Barack Obama. In fact, next week I'll be reporting from Denver as I attend the Democratic National Convention. And I wonder, what would you do if you were Barack Obama and you became president on January 20th? You can't simply say that because of all the horrific things America has done, that Barack Obama can't take any action. With a new president, I like to think outside the box. What can we do in the future to undig the hole, to climb out of the hole that George Bush put us into? And I don't think that America should simply retreat, lick our wounds, and say, we've been bad, we can't ever help any democracy ever again. Because I think America has both helped democracy and harmed democracy, and I want to see us on the right side. Again, I'm not arguing we should send American troops to Georgia, certainly not. But I am saying that through diplomatic sanctions, the diplomatic option, the same kind of thing I think we could use or could have used against Iran or North Korea or any other authoritarian state, diplomacy is what won the Cold War. Using sanctions is what stopped South African apartheid. And that without military action, we still can have power. And the fascinating thing is Europe's behind us on this one. Europe is ahead of the curve. Nicolas Sarkozy of France is ahead of the curve, and we need to support his actions. Do I think President Bush can do a good job of it? No, I don't think so. I think he has no moral authority. But the next president can, and I'd like to think for the future of what Barack Obama can do in this situation. Let's go to Beth. Beth,
hi.
Welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Okay. I think that we probably want to take a step back and take a look at the huge geopolitical landscape and understand what happened in Georgia.
Okay.
I think a couple of your folks touched on it. And this is, I think as Americans, we ought to become really informed and then understand in when we do certain actions, they always have a reaction. And one of the things that you said you didn't know about, but it is indeed true, I mean, this is factual, that one of McCain's lobbyists, one of his top advisors, is a lobbyist for the Georgian government. He just got paid like $600,000 or something like that. I mean, he lobbies for the Georgian government.
Okay.
I think that's a conflict of interest. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but I agree with you. I mean, I forget.
Let me finish.
Charlie Black, McCain's guy, has lobbied for vicious dictators as well,
as
Georgia.
But right now, in the middle of this conflict, in the middle of an election, my personal feeling, lobbying for a foreign government, that's a little bit of a conflict of interest.
I agree with you.
But, I mean, just put that to the side. I think that you have to step back a bit. What was going on here? Putting the missiles in Poland, it is not ironic that, okay, 2 days later, Poland says, okay, now we'll do this. I mean, this is all a chess game that's going on here. And somebody talked about the pipeline, yes, in the Caspian Sea, because basically right now Russia actually controlled the levers of how the oil and gas moves into Europe. They're going to have a more nuanced position than America because they get 50% of their oil and gas from there. But if, in fact, we can get Georgia to tap through there, then we cut into Russia's leverage. That's what this is all about. So, therefore, okay, now if you step back a little further, we have been amassing all kind of weaponry into Georgia, both Israelis and the Americans. Now, today I'm hearing that, you know, Russia has captured all of American tankers and all this. What is our stuff doing in Georgia? Do you know? I mean, so the point I'm making to you is this. I think Russia saw the buildup. I understand American, they wanted to move in there, and if Georgia gets this pipeline, it helps the Europeans and it helps us. But I think we should have been more clever in the way we dealt with Russia, because as long as you think that Russia's back is up against the wall, and I'm not standing here trying to necessarily defend Russia and what they did. But I think if we step back as if we're playing a chess game, you know, George Bush just blundered it. You see what I mean? I mean, because
I do. I agree with you that it's a complicated chess game, and I agree with you that George Bush blundered it. I mean, he's over there in the Olympics when we really needed to play a very careful game.
And remember another thing. What was he doing? He was hugging the guy from Russia. Did you see that?
Right.
And he saw that. But here's the inside scoop. Condoleezza Rice and George Bush warned Georgia not to do that.
That's
they
true.
Warned them. That's why you saw how pissed off Condoleezza Rice
right.
looked when Kashvili was just ranting and raving at
right.
her, because they know they told him. And
Georgia walked into a trap.
He wants Biden because he thinks that they set him up.
Yeah, no, Georgia walked into a trap. There's no question about it. Russia was looking for a pretext. They
Absolutely.
Were looking for an excuse.
And,
Georgia
and
stupidly walked
if
into Kashvili the trap.
Kashvili went and did that. It would help us. And too bad, Kashvili. But now we got the Polans. You see my point? And Kashvili did not play the cards right, and we did not play the Russians. And the Russians believe they followed us into democracy, they lost all their money, and they think, oh, oops, maybe that didn't work. And you're right, we could have done a better job to help them. So that's my point.
Well, Beth, I agree with you. I think you gave a very sophisticated analysis. It is complex. Georgia by no means is innocent in this.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, we
and
have
right
to do something.
We look impotent. We look impotent.
We do, and it helps.
What are we going to do?
You're absolutely right.
Russia's looking at us like, and what are you going to do?
Exactly.
And we,
now
we keep drawing lines, and the Europeans are not going to do anything because they get 50% of their oil and gas. I mean, they can't cut their nose to spite their face.
Well, that's why I'm proud of Sarkozy.
Got a grand mess.
That's why I'm proud of Sarkozy, because I think he stood against. You're right about European interests. You're absolutely right about 50% of the oil, and he said he had the Russians sign something. Now you might say it's just a piece of paper. But they signed saying they were going to leave. And that piece of paper, although you could say, you know, it's worthless, there's still troops there.
No, but they're going to eventually come out, because I don't think Russia wants to look – I mean, as much as Russia wants respect. That's one of the biggest thing. And they want to let America know we're a superpower like you. And as long as you kind of flick us away like a bug, then, you know, we're going to assert ourselves. And I just think that you're right. Barack Obama – is sorely needed, because we need someone who can sit behind that chess game and understand you just don't jump. You play it strategically so that you keep you keep people like Russia closer. But because we have a president who's not very articulate and doesn't understand well, he farms out every diplomatic thing, whether it's to Condoleezza or anybody else, because he doesn't understand the big picture.
Beth, you're absolutely right. I'll just close out with one story, and
sure.
I absolutely agree with you. Many people don't know about the gambling habits of Barack Obama and John McCain. I just want to close this hour by telling you, if you don't know, Barack Obama plays small stakes poker. He does it. He does it with his friends. It tends to be nickel dime kind of thing. And he's known as a very conservative player, one who thinks out his move very carefully and then takes an action. John McCain, many of you may or may not know, likes to play craps. For thousands of dollars, he will walk into a casino and place thousands of dollars hoping for a lucky roll of the dice. And it seems to me that Beth is exactly right. We need someone who's careful, who's thoughtful, who understands how to play chess or poker, if you will, knows where it is, gives Russia the saving face they need, but at the same time insists that they act within the law, just as he insists that America act within the law as well. And I think, I hope, I pray he is our next president to take us out of some of the danger that George W. Bush got us into. Thank you, everyone that called in, even the ones that disagree with me. I'm glad you did. If you want to find out more about me or listen to my show on a regular basis, obviously I'm once a month, third Tuesday, right here, WPFW 89.3 FM. If you want to hear me more often, go to RadioInsideScoop.com. Check me out. I'd love to hear from you. For now, this is Mark Levine, signing off.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
WPFW, Washington.